Hi there, this is the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Ost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour from True Confessions magazine. It's called I Can't Let Her Know I'm a Failure. Here's the story. The soil drifted through my fingers as I stared out over the parched fields of corn. The top soil was drier than week old bread. From the way the stalks were listing to the side, I knew that several inches down, the soil wasn't any wetter. If we didn't get some rain soon, it would be all over. The bank would foreclose and our farm would be sold. It would become yet another subdivision, like so many of our neighbors' properties had. I turned toward the house. As I walked nearer, I saw my wife painting. She was working on a portrait of the kids. Juliet was a talented artist. When she'd been in high school, she'd received a full scholarship to a prestigious art school. She'd been the pride of our small town, and everyone had entertained great hopes that she'd put our little corner of the heartland on the map. Instead, she'd married me and ended up slaving on our godforsaken patch of dirt. Not able to bear watching her paint anymore. It was a reminder of all that she'd given up for me. I changed my direction and went around to the back of the barn, peeling off my shirt and tossing it aside. I started to split some cord wood for our wood-burning stove. Using the wood helped to keep our heating costs down in the winter. Usually the rhythmic sound of the axe splitting the wood soothed me, but that day, with each log that I split, a part of the past cracked open and spilled into my memory. As each moment became clearer, the moments became more disturbing. I relived how I'd come to find myself in such a terrible situation, one that threatened my livelihood and my family. I still remembered the impact of the female body, of the lithe, as I'd felt when she had barreled into me that day. "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hurt you, did I?" a voice straight from heaven had asked. I was about to tell her that it would have taken a lot more than that to hurt me, but before I could say anything, she let out a squeal and hugged me. "Oh my gosh, is it really you, Brandon?" she asked. Then I realized that my attacker was Juliet Haynes, the kid sister of a high school friend. I searched my mind trying to figure out how old she'd have been by then. "Hey, Juliet, how are you?" I was pleasantly surprised by how good she felt in my arms, and I made no attempt to release her. "Not bad," she replied, keeping her arms around me, too. It was as if it was the most natural thing in the world for us to be doing, standing there in the middle of the sidewalk, holding each other. "I heard that you were back in town." "Yeah, I opted out of the service after my hitch. I came back and bought my folks' place. How's Mark?" I released her then and stepped back a space. "Oh, he's the same. You know how my big brother is," she grinned. I'd known Mark very well. At one point in our lives, we'd played sports together in high school, and I'd often hung out at their house. Mark and I had even gone into the military together. But while I had decided not to continue at the end of my hitch, Mark had decided to make a career of military service. "Well, the trouble is that neither of us was ever very good at writing letters, so I suppose we've kind of lost touch. You'll tell him that I said hello, won't you?" I asked her. Juliet nodded. "It was nice running into you," I told her. Then I smiled and went into the store. When I came out again, Juliet was blocking the doorway. She took a deep breath before she spoke. "Brandon, is it true that you're trying out those new genetically engineered crops at your place?" she asked. "Yes," I replied, a bit cautiously. I was aware that there were people who felt that it wasn't good to mess with Mother Nature. On the other hand, there were others like me who felt that we had to do something in order to ensure that our crops produced to capacity and survived, no matter what the weather conditions. I was curious to find out which side she was on. I was really shocked when she looked up at me with those eyes, more breathtaking than ever, and began to ask a question nervously. "I was wondering," she began, "I'm doing a paper for school on different kinds of crops and their suitability for certain climates. I thought that maybe I could come out and see what you're doing, and then maybe we could talk." Relieved that our encounter hadn't turned into a confrontation, I quickly agreed to her request. "Sure, I'll be glad to help you," I told her. She looked so happy and pretty when I agreed that my heart did a little flip in my chest. That should have been a warning, but at the time, I ignored it. Over the next few months, Juliet came out to the farm to learn more about my crops. Some days when she wasn't able to get out to the farm, I'd make the long trip into town. I used the excuse of giving her literature that she could have just as easily have gotten on her next visit. I didn't want to admit to myself that it was because I wanted to see her, to spend more time with her. Instead, I rationalized that she'd need the information to write a good paper. Slowly, though, I came to the realization that I was happiest when she was working by my side. She did that often as she researched my crops. I found her presence to be both exciting and terrifying. But when her paper was finished, Juliet didn't stop coming out to the farm, and I didn't stop visiting her at home. At first, I thought that I was just infatuated with her. Working the farm didn't leave me a lot of time for dating, and she was a very pretty young woman. What harm could it do to enjoy her company? I kept reminding myself that when September came, we'd say goodbye. She'd go off to school, and I'd be busy with harvesting. We'd drift apart as surely as Mark and I had. I'd still deluded myself into thinking that there was no future for us, even when a hug or thanks of friendship soon led to a peck on the cheek. That in turn had led to a kiss on the lips. Once I tasted her sweetness, though, I'd known that I had to quit kidding myself. I knew then what I felt for Juliet had gone way beyond friendship. I really liked her. In fact, I knew that there was a possibility that I would actually be in love with her. Still, my conscience nagged at me. I'd been in the military, and finally, I was living my dream. I'd used my savings from the service as a down payment on my folks' farm. The bank had given me a loan for the rest of the sale price, and Mom and Dad had taken the money and moved to a senior community in Arizona. I kept reminding myself that Juliet was just finishing high school. She had the same right to pursue her dream as I had. Yet the more time I spent with Juliet, the more I wanted to spend, and my growing affection for her warmed with my common sense. Then one late summer evening after we'd finished work, we'd collapsed on the grass with our feet dangling in the brook that ran through the farm. We were both aware that in less than a month, Juliet would be leaving for that prestigious art school. "This place is so beautiful, so peaceful," she said, blessing me with her lovely smile. "How can anyone look at this beauty and doubt that there is a God?" "It beats me," I admitted. We fell silent for a few minutes, each lost in our own thoughts. "You know, I'm envious of you, Brandon," Juliet told me. "Of me? What for?" I was shocked. "You'll have this beauty in your life forever. All I have for the next 4 years is concrete buildings and sidewalks." Then Juliet rolled on her side and looked at me with those magnificent eyes of hers. My gaze focused on her mouth as it formed the words. Without thinking about what I was doing, I leaned across and touched her lips with mine, just barely making contact. Juliet seemed as unsatisfied with that as I was, though, because she shifted closer to me and the kiss became more demanding. When we broke apart, we were both gasping for air. "Juliet, forget school, please. Stay here with me. Be my wife." Once the words were out, I couldn't call them back, and surprisingly, I found that I didn't want to. Juliet was absolutely still for a moment. Then she kissed me gently and quickly. "Is that a proposal, Brandon?" she asked. "A proposal?" The word ricocheted around in my head, but my heart answered. "Yes, Juliet, I suppose it is. I know that I haven't told you that I love you, but I do. My love's been growing ever since you careened into me that day. I think from the way you just kissed me that you feel something for me too, don't you?" Julie nodded. "So will you? Will you marry me? Will you be my partner in my dream to carry on my family's tradition with this farm?" I asked. She didn't hesitate for a moment. "Yes, Brandon, yes, I will marry you. The more time I spend here with you working on your land, the more your dream has become mine, and the more I've fallen in love with you. I don't want to live anywhere but here with you," she told me. I was beside myself with joy. My dream had now expanded to include Juliet and a family. Life was wonderful, and I felt blessed. Juliet's folks and the whole town weren't very happy, however. When Juliet announced that she was going to marry me instead of going off to study in a prestigious school, but somehow Juliet was able to convince everyone that it was what she really wanted to do. And so our wedding at the town church was filled to capacity. Married life was great. In the mornings, I'd get busy with the chores while Juliet did a few things in the house. Then she'd pack a lunch for us and join me, working by my side. At lunchtime, we'd sit together and eat. We'd share the sandwiches and whatever else she packed, and I'd tell her of my plans for our farm. If this genetically engineered feed comes into widespread use, then we'll be at the forefront of the farmers who are providing it. Then maybe, just maybe, we'll get a big contract that will keep us living comfortably for a long time to come. Looking over at Juliet, I smiled. With you. Then I pulled her into my arms and kissed her. "How would you like to live our dream with a son or daughter, too?" Juliet asked about 5 months after we were married. I stared at her, shocked. "You mean..." I began. Juliet nodded. I jumped up and, lifting her into my arms, spun her around and around until we both tumbled to the ground. Then we kissed and thanked God for the miracle that our love had made. A few years later, Elizabeth followed Patricia, and then Allison came next. It was almost as if the girls' births had brought us good luck. During the years following the girls' births, we had wonderful harvests. Even the cows we'd bought gave us enough milk so that we could sell the extra, and too, a few of the steers had sold for fairly decent prices at auction. We were high on our dream and its reality. We took another mortgage on the farm and bought some new farm machinery and ponies for the girls. I'd already bought horses for both Juliet and myself a few years earlier. I knew that horses made it easier to find the other farm animals when they wandered off and tried to hide in the brushes in our pastures. Life was wonderful, and in our euphoria, we forgot the most important lesson of all. Life was a cycle. Sometimes the bad times followed the good, especially when your livelihood was dependent upon the whims of Mother Nature. America's breadbasket, as the farming country was called, suffered a drought, leaving me and many other small farmers struggling to survive. I'd become so lost in the past that I didn't notice my daughter, Patricia, standing in front of me one night until she practically screamed at me, "Daddy, Daddy, do you hear me? Mommy said that you're to come in for dinner," she told me. I finished splitting the piece of wood that I was working on. "Tell her that I'll be right there," Patricia smiled and skipped back up to the house. On my way in to eat, I noticed the mailman coming down the lane. I changed directions and met him. "Got anything good for me today?" I asked. "Sorry, Brandon," he said. "I wish I did have for you the same thing that I seem to be delivering to all of your neighbors. Bills, bills, and more bills." He looked at the envelopes in his hand, and it looks like a couple of collection notices, too. I grimaced and took the pile of envelopes from him. "Thanks anyway." I left the mail on the bench in the mudroom with my boots, passing a smile on my face. I entered the kitchen. All through the prayer and supper itself, I caught Juliet looking at me with questioning eyes. I ignored her looks until the girls had finished eating and left the room. Then I let my smile slip. Getting up, I retrieved the mail and placed it on the table in front of her. She gasped when she saw the collection notices. "I'll call them all. Don't worry, honey. I'll work something out with them. This is just temporary. Next year will be better, I promise. Just you wait and see," she said in her soft, sweet voice. Then, in a very wifely gesture, Juliet reached across the table and gripped my hand and smiled. It was a forced smile, but I really appreciated her effort. Not for the first time since our financial troubles had begun, I thought about all that she'd given up to be my wife, to raise our daughters, and to live in debt with me. She deserved better than what I'd given her. "No, I'll call them," I tried to smile back at her as I picked up the stack of envelopes and went to the desk. Sitting down, I looked hopelessly out the window across my wilting fields. "Dear God, help me. Help me," I prayed softly. "How did I ever get to this place in my life? How did all my dreams turn sour?" My dad had worked the farm through good times and bad, as had his father before him and his father before that. As a child, when I'd ask my father what he would do, If something were to go terribly wrong, he'd never given me a straight answer. We're men. We take care of our own, he'd say. And if we can't, then we'd better give up. I knew in my heart that my father had been right, but I just didn't know what more I could do to take care of my own, and I wished desperately that he'd given me some idea of how to do it. The representatives from the collection companies insisted that they had to be paid, and more than the measly few dollars a month that I'd offered them, paying them threw our whole budget out of whack. We ended up selling the girls' ponies and then Juliet's horse just to meet the minimum payments. We managed to struggle through the year, and when planting season came, I felt such hope, but so did the bank, hope that they'd get their money, even if it meant throwing us off our farm and selling the property if we had another bad year. I knew that things couldn't continue as they'd been. Our nest egg, funded by the generous wedding presents of our families and friends and the extra that we'd added during the good times, was dwindling fast. So I took a job working nights as a security guard. By working nights, I was able to keep up with the farm chores during the day and sleep in the evenings before I had to go to work. Yet, what I made barely put a dent in our debt. While it had stopped growing, it wasn't shrinking either. Prayers and church had always been a very big part of Julie's and my lives, both while growing up and as married adults. Every evening after the girls were in bed and our chores were done, Juliet and I had prayed together, but since we had different bedtimes, we no longer prayed together, and that didn't sit well with my wife. One night, as I was eating dinner before leaving for work, she brought it up. "Brandon, I really miss our praying together. I miss that special feeling that I got when we both offered God our problems and our joys. I always thought of that as such a special time for you and me. Don't you miss that special closeness that we felt after we prayed together?" she asked. I didn't answer. I'd been so busy trying to keep our heads above water that I hadn't given much thought to the way the things had once been. "I'm worried about you, Brandon," Juliet told me. "You don't even come to church anymore with the girls and me." Her words made me think. To be perfectly honest, I didn't miss any of it. I was just busy trying to take care of her, the farm, the kids, and my job as a security guard, that I didn't have any time or energy left over for praying. Besides, Sunday morning was the only time that I could catch up on my sleep. I had another thought, too, one which I was hesitant to bring up to her. "You know, Juliet," I ventured one night. I caught her hand as she walked to the sink. She turned and looked at me as I continued. "What good did all of that praying get us? We were no better off than we were now. We still had debt, and the crops still needed water that they weren't getting. No matter how hard I try, nothing changes. It seems like God isn't listening, and we wasted a lot of our time. We were praying for nothing." Juliet gasped. I set my coffee mug on the table and left for work. Once or twice after that, she tried to bring up the subject again, but I made some excuse and left the house. I just didn't know where I stood with God or where he stood with me. I didn't have a lot of energy to think about it then. I filed the subject under something that I think about later in my mind and plowed through my days. A few months later, I got a raise, but most of that was eaten up by taxes. I felt as though I was just spinning my wheels. Juliet must have felt that way too, because I came home one morning and found her in tears. That was the first time we'd ever had a real honest-to-goodness fight. "Brandon, I'm glad you're home," she said, and her voice was suddenly loud and harsh. "The dryer quit working again, and nothing I do seems to make it work. Fix it, will you, so I can get this huge pile of laundry done?" "I'm tired," I told her. "I'll look at it after I come in from putting seed down in the fields behind the barn." "That won't be until after lunch. What am I supposed to do until then?" she inquired, stepping right in my path. "How am I supposed to know? Bake or something. I don't care." I didn't know how to respond to that. Juliet, the woman who was so unlike my wife. My wife had always been so easygoing. She'd always been so able to make her own decisions and to take care of what needed to be done, no matter what. "Bake? I don't want to bake or something. That's not what I had planned for today. I need to do laundry, so you'll look at the dryer now," Julie ordered, her eyes flashing anger and her lips pulled into a tight little line. In all the years that we'd been married, she'd never given me an order or challenged me in that way. We'd tried really hard to be respectful to one another, and when it came to a compromise, and we tried to do that, that had suited us both. Somehow, though, that discussion had gotten out of hand. "I told you that I'd look at it later." By then, I was shouting, "Now, where's my breakfast? I'm starved and I need to eat and get to work." Juliet just glared at me. "What am I, your maid?" she asked angrily. "Get your own breakfast and the kids, and I need clean clothes." For a moment, I wondered if I'd heard her right. My wife had never been argumentative. I supposed I should have known that it was a sign of how upset she was. But I was upset too, and I just didn't know when to keep my mouth shut. "How is getting my own breakfast going to get them clean clothes?" I challenged. It wasn't that I couldn't rustle up something for myself. I'd done it often enough before we married. It was just that Juliet usually had something ready for me, and it helped me get to my chores faster. I was so tired, I was frustrated, and truth be told, I hated that she had to use appliances that were old and always breaking down. And so I let my mouth run away with me. "Well, how is getting my own breakfast going to help get the kids clean clothes if the dryer's broken? Can you tell me that?" I persisted. Juliet didn't answer. She just left me standing in the middle of the kitchen and went into the laundry room. A few minutes later, she came out dragging four large bags of clothes, which she took outside and hoisted into the bed of the truck. As she passed, I reached for one of the bags, but she batted my hand away. Coming back into the kitchen, she grabbed her purse. "I'm not telling you this because I think that I have to," she said. "I'm telling you this as a courtesy. If you need me, I'll be at my parents' house doing laundry." With that, she left the room. She slammed the door with such finality that I cringed. Juliet came back later with four bags of clean clothes. Again, she refused my offer of help. When I asked if she'd eaten, she nodded. Even though Juliet and I never had to say much while we ate, the girls usually stumbled over one another, trying to fill us in on their days. That night's dinner was especially quiet. It was obvious that even the girls knew that something wasn't right. When they'd finished eating and had been excused, Juliet got up and brought her purse to the table. Reaching inside, she pulled out some forms. She slapped them down in front of me. "These are loan papers from the Farm Services Agency," she said briskly. "What good will they do?" "Will they do?" I asked. "Well, Mom did our laundry." I went and talked to the agency worker, and he explained that we can get our payments down. That should give us some money for a few extras, she told me. Sighing deeply, I rubbed my burning eyes. "I don't want to talk about this now. I'm tired, and all I want to do is go to bed for a few hours before I have to leave for work." I pushed my chair back and stood up. "Brandon, if you don't fill these forms out, I will," Juliet insisted. "I'm tired of feeding the kids oatmeal or yogurt every day for lunch. We've eaten so many eggs, it's a wonder we all haven't sprouted feathers and started clucking. This really isn't healthy for the kids. They need other foods and some fun snacks, too." Julie sighed. "Brandon, look at me," she said softly. Slowly, I sat back down and my gaze met with hers. "If you won't do this for us," she murmured, "do it for your daughters." For several long seconds, we stared at one another. I knew that I had to swallow my pride. I loved Juliet and the girls to distraction, and I wanted only what was best for them. Didn't she know how badly it hurt that I couldn't provide the extras? That was not how I'd wanted our life to be. That was not how my dream of a farm, Juliet and a family, was to be lived out. We were supposed to have good crops, well-fed livestock, and happiness filling every crack and corner in our home. But we didn't. "Brandon, I told you that if you don't fill them out, I will," Julie prodded me. "All right," I reluctantly agreed. "Fill out what you can and I'll finish them in the morning. I'm tired. I've got to get some sleep." The loan process took forever. Neither of us mentioned it as time crept slowly by and we waited to hear from the agency. Yet each time the phone rang and each visit by the mailman only heightened the tension. If I thought that giving someone the intimate details of a life filled with hard work with nothing to show for it was the only blow my pride had to take, I had another thing coming. It was a small enough price to pay for my wife and children, I convinced myself, but shortly thereafter, Juliet delivered another whammy when she announced that she was taking a job as a cleaning woman. "You're what?" I yelled when she told me. "Oh, no, you're not. No wife of mine is going to work. I'm the man here. I provide for my own." "Look, Brandon," she stated calmly, "you can't do it all. It's not your fault. The way that things have turned out, it's just the way that it is. We're at the mercy of Mother Nature, and there's nothing more that you can do." She paused hesitantly. "Besides, I've already agreed to take the job. I've made arrangements with Mom to drop the girls off in the morning so that she can send them to school. I'll pick them up at school at her place, too. And while you're angry with me already, I might as well tell you that I applied for food stamps." I was livid. "Well, you can keep your money. It isn't going to pay for my farm. And as for your food stamps, they aren't paying for my food either." How much is a man supposed to take? I wondered. Then I saw the tears trickling down Juliet's cheeks, feeling like a heel for my outburst, but still madder than bees when their hive has been disturbed. I left for work early. An uneasy silence settled over the house. After that night, it continued to grow until it was like another person living with us. Juliet and I barely spoke anymore. Since we had no time alone, our love life became non-existent. We stopped indulging even in the small gestures of affection, like a rub on the shoulder as we passed each other, or a kiss when one or the other of us left the house. I pushed myself even harder, taking overtime when I could get it. The result was that I was always too tired to do anything with her and the girls, and the four of them had a life that was separate from mine, a life that didn't seem to include me in it. I constantly felt like I was on the outside looking in, a boarder in my own home. Juliet used her money for clothes and things for the girls. The rest, she insisted, should be put toward the utility bills, which she calmly stated were partly her responsibility because she and the girls used them too. And I hated to admit it, but we'd been eating better since she'd gotten the food stamps. It didn't help that my father's words, "A man takes care of his own, and if he can't, he's no man," kept running around in my head. It was the way that I'd been brought up, our family philosophy. The biggest weight on my shoulders through all of that was guilt, a guilt that had been growing since our troubles started. Juliet still painted, and her work was incredible. Who could tell how marvelous it might have been had she taken the scholarship and gotten the proper training. Sometimes when I'd be watching TV, I'd see those documentaries on famous artists who lived in Paris and attended fancy parties. Juliet could have had all that, I think, and I took it away from her. I got her hooked on my dream of owning a farm and ruined her life as surely as I'd gotten her hooked on drugs or alcohol. But I truly believe that it was the smiles that got to me the most. Those famous artists had big, happy, shining smiles. In the past several years, Juliet's smiles had become pinched and guarded. That is, the few times I'd seen her smile at all, it seemed that she saved her smiles only for the girls. I suppose I wasn't the only one who realized that something was wrong with Juliet's smile. One Sunday, I came out of the barn and saw a strange car in our driveway. I went through the mudroom into the kitchen. Even though the pots on the stove were bubbling away, the table was empty. Then I noticed that the dining room table was decked out in the good linens and our wedding dishes. A man's voice drifted toward me from the living room. Pushing open the swinging door, I walked in to find our pastor and Juliet deep in conversation while the girls played a board game. "Pastor Arnold," I said, "what brings you all this way out of town?" "Well, Brandon, the offer of a good home-cooked meal, for one thing." He rose and shook my hand. "How are you?" "Fine, just fine," I replied. The man looked skeptical but said nothing. Juliet excused herself to begin serving dinner. I was saved from making small talk when Allison asked Pastor Arnold to play a game with her. Dinner was filled with conversations between Pastor Arnold and the girls, but once dessert was served and they'd been excused, I knew that I'd find out why the man was really there. "We miss you at church, Brandon," he said. "Nothing like getting to the point," I thought. "Well, I don't have a lot of time for church these days, Pastor," I told him. "I know you've been pretty busy lately, but I'm worried about you, Juliet, and the girls. I want to know what I and your fellow parishioners can do to help to ease your burden." That's just great, I thought. Now, not only do Juliet's folks know about our problems, but the church congregation does too. Probably the whole town knows that I can't take care of my own family. That's rich, Pastor. All my neighbors are in the same boat. No money, not enough rain for our crops, lots of debt, and the bank ripping at our heels, or nipping, that is. But for some reason, you're worried about Juliet and me? How can they help me when none of us can help ourselves? You're right, Brandon, he said. A lot of my parishioners are in the same predicament as you, but they seem to have one thing that you don't. I continued to stare at the man, but I said nothing. Brandon, he finally said, they have the warmth of their families, their faith in their God, and their fellowship with one another. I wasn't sure where the conversation was going, so I kept quiet. One thing that I was sure of was that I wasn't going to explain myself to a man whom didn't owe money to every utility in town, the feed store and the grocery store. Most importantly, he didn't owe the bank that could take his house, and he didn't have a family who were pennies away from losing their home. I can't make you come to church, he continued, nor can I make you share your burden with others, but as your pastor, I can ask you to save your family. That got my attention. What do you mean, save my family? I asked. What do you know about my family? My family's fine, unless there's something I haven't been told. I turned to Juliet, who was leaning against the door leading into the kitchen and silently crying. She came over and slid down the chair next to mine. I'll tell him, Pastor. She wiped her eyes and swallowed a couple of times. Brandon, she said, taking my hand, the girls aren't doing well at school. When their grades started to slip and Elizabeth started acting up in class, Jover Tulo, you remember him, he went to school with you and Mark? I nodded. Well, Joe talked to them and they told him that their parents don't talk anymore and that their mother's always sad. They told him that their father doesn't want anything to do with them. I gasped and my breath stuck in my throat. They told Joe that you just work and sleep at home. They said that you never go to church with them. They told him that you never do anything with us and that you don't want their mother or them anymore. My heart was beating so loudly in my chest that I was sure that both Juliet and Pastor Arnold could hear it. Brandon, they're afraid that we're going to get a divorce and that they'll never see you again, she whispered. They're what? I jumped up. Where'd they ever get such a crazy idea? Get them in here right now and we'll set them straight. Tears trickled down Juliet's face. It's not such a crazy idea, Brandon, she told me. Her tears were breaking my heart. Pastor Arnold nudged me to sit down. What do you know about all of this? I challenged Pastor Arnold. Joe's a parishioner, too. You know, sometimes when he has a situation at school and he needs another opinion about something, we talk. He was a friend of yours in high school, and he's worried about you. When he came to me, I waylaid Juliet after church. He paused. Brandon, the girls overheard Juliet talking to her mother. I looked at my wife, stunned. In my wildest dreams, I had never even considered that she'd leave me. Juliet wiped her eyes and took my hand in hers. Brandon, you're working so hard, I worry about you. You've become so obsessed with saving the farm that it's all you can see. The girls are right. You never have time for them or me. Or for me. I understand, but they don't. I could hear what she was saying, but all that registered in my mind were Pastor Arnold's words. about what the kids had said, but that doesn't explain why the kids think we're getting a divorce. Did you say that you were going to divorce me? I had to ask. Yes, she admitted. I felt as though a horse had kicked me in the chest. It was all that I could do to continue sitting up straight in the chair. Brandon, Juliet continued, when they didn't hear, what they didn't hear was me telling Mom that I'd get a divorce if that's what it took to make you wake up and realize that we're in this together. You've got to stop shutting me out. You're making me feel guilty for trying to help. I'm your wife, but you make my helping seem like I'm insulting you, like I'm saying that you aren't man enough to take care of your family. You make it seem like the farm is more important than the kids and me. Oh, honey, I told her, you and the girls are the most important things in my life. I gently wiped the tears from her cheeks. Oh, Juliet, why do you think I'm trying so hard? It's just that I feel that I'm failing miserably. Otherwise, you wouldn't have to work so hard, and the government wouldn't be buying food for my kids. I felt so ashamed that I couldn't even look at her. Pulling my hand free of hers, I rested my elbows on the table and laid my head in my hands. Juliet, I said, if anyone feels guilty here, it should be me. What do you think it does to me to see you drag in here so tired at night, to never see you smile anymore, when I know that you could have had a better life if you hadn't married me? Juliet let out a noise of protest, but I continued. How do you think I feel when I remember all that you gave up for me, your partner, your scholarship? Then I told her what I thought about what I saw famous artists, or when I saw them on TV, and how it caused my heart to ache. By the time I finished, I was crying too. I had my head on my crossed arms and let the tears flow. I cried for all that Juliet had given up, for the pain that my children were suffering, and for all I'd lose if Juliet divorced me. Pastor Arnold said nothing, but Juliet stood and came up behind me, laying her head against mine and wrapping her arms around me. She began to speak. I love you, Brandon. Please don't feel badly about my scholarship or about anything in the past. I chose to stay here. Do you hear me? It was my choice, what I really wanted to do. If I didn't want to be here with you and share your dream of making the farm work, I wouldn't have stayed, no matter what you said or did. It was my decision, not yours. She stroked my hair. As for my job and the food stamps, Brandon, they don't mean that you can't take care of us. I got them to help, to make things easier for you, so that you'd have less to worry about, so you wouldn't have to work so hard. Juliet fell silent then, and I couldn't have spoken if my life depended on it. I was confused and so upset, I couldn't even think straight. Pastor Arnold cleared his throat. I had almost forgotten that he was there. Can I make a suggestion? He asked. We both nodded. There are marriage retreats, weekends for couples who are having problems. They are a time for you to find each other again. Why don't you two go on such a retreat? I'll really give you a chance to talk to each other. All these things, to talk to each other, about all these things. And it will give you the opportunity to talk with marriage experts and other couples who are having trouble like you. He paused as if to gauge our reaction to his suggestion and then continued. I can make the arrangements. If you'd like, don't worry about the cost either. There is only for a donation what you can afford. Or let's see, there is only Okay. I'm sure that Juliet's folks will take care of the church. Oh, we'll see. Let me start over. They'll take care of the girls, and that someone from the church will see that your chores get done around here. Brandon, in fact, I'll even do them myself if necessary. I looked up at Juliet, and she had such hope in her eyes. Brandon, please, she pleaded. Standing, I took her face in between my hands. Don't beg, honey, never beg from me. I want us to go, Brandon. She wrapped her arms around me. It had been such a long time we'd held each other. Then we'll go, I announced. Juliet hugged me together. We looked at Pastor Arnold. Thank you, God, and my soul echoed his prayer. Juliet and I really connected during that marriage retreat. On the drive home that Sunday night, I felt almost like I had that day when I'd asked her to marry me. For the first time since our trouble had started, Juliet and I prayed that weekend, and I left a peace. I felt a peace come upon me that had so been lacking. I also recalled what Pastor Arnold had told us when we were married. Our marriage was more important than anything, but the most important partner in a marriage was God. We could plan all we wanted to, but without him as part of the plan. Well, those past few years had been a good example of what happened when he wasn't. We all had been miserable. In those 2 short days, Juliet and I started on the road for sorting out the mess our life had become. For the first time in a long time, I had hoped that we'd make it. After the weekend, there were a few months of follow-up sessions. I learned that the pain and problems that Juliet and I were experiencing weren't going to go away unless we talked to one another. I explained to her about my father and how his words had made me feel like a failure. I explained how her getting a job in food stamps had only added to those feelings. Once she understood that, she told me that so many things finally made sense to her. I stopped working overtime and spread out my chores on the farm so I'd have time to spend with the girls. It took a while, but eventually the girls truly came to believe that Juliet and I were not divorcing. Through the counseling we sought after the retreat, I realized that my dad had been right when he said that a man takes care of his own, but he'd been wrong when he said that you weren't a man if you couldn't do it yourself. Also, I finally accepted that I wasn't responsible for Juliet not taking her scholarship and possibly becoming a famous artist. It had been ultimately her decision. Actually, when that finally sank in, I was humbled that a good woman like her would give up so much just because she loved me. A few times after the retreat, my pride and my brand new resolve were tested again. Julie wanted to take some courses to further her education. That meant that I would have to help out more with the girls. By then, the crops were doing well, and it looked as though the drought had passed. And so Juliet started night school. She studied for her degree, while my girls and I got to know each other better. A new bond formed between my girls and me. Even though it took Juliet a little longer than normal to finish her associate's degree, she graduated at the top of her class. I think the worst is over for us. Mother Nature could change her mind at any time, and we could have problems again. But if that happens, I know that it will not be a repeat of the past. We'll be okay next time with God's help. We'll work together and share the bad times just like we do the good. Okay, that's the end of that story, and this is going to do it for the romance program. I hope you enjoyed listening to my story. Have a great week. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Ost for Sun Sounds. Take care.